This is 89.9 WWNO. Another weekend is fast approaching. Do you have plans? Not quite sure how you spend your time? Well, if you need a little help, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an art exhibit, a classical recital, a good read, or a little something off the beaten path, we've got answers. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Just the mention of Dookie Chase's restaurant and its legendary chef, Leah Chase, bring to mind warm memories for many New Orleanians and, for that matter, diners from across the globe. She's entertained the masses from presidents to civil rights leaders, iconic musicians, and everyday diners. At Dookie's, everyone is family. Chase, a philanthropist and supporter of the arts, is now the subject of an exhibit at the New Orleans Museum of Art. Leah Chase, paintings by Gustav Bloch III, a New Orleans-born and reared figurative painter in his mid-30s, now living in Brooklyn, New York, documents the octogenarian chef at work in the restaurant located in Treme at the corner of Orleans Avenue and Miro Street, a view rarely seen by the public.
The idea was really to tell the behind-the-scenes aspect of the restaurant, you know, when supplies come in, from her getting in the morning at 7:30 and starting her prep work. Those parts of the restaurant aren't quite magnified, and so I wanted to share that with the audience and let everyone know and see really how hard Ms. Chase works and her staff just to put lunch and now on Friday dinner together for everyone in New Orleans.
The idea for the restaurant series was presented to Bloch by his art representative, Eugene Demude, who happened to be dining at Dookie Chase's restaurant on the evening the world learned of the demise of the King of Pop.
Eugene called me the night that Michael Jackson passed away and had this wonderful idea for me to document Miss Chase in the restaurant because, you know, it dawned on him that, she used to serve the Jacksons when they were kids, and she would tell him stories about that. So when he presented me with the idea, I was floored. I said, you know what, that's it. I'll do it, make the introduction, and let's see where we can go from there.
Chase welcomed the idea, and Bloch set up shop in the restaurant's small kitchen.
I wanted to do the best that I could to stay out of her way and just monitor what she was doing and not impede her thought process while cooking, because I wanted her process to be captured as true to form as possible for the viewer to be able to see. It was a combination of photographic reference that I took, and also I would set up an easel and come in and do color studies and sketches.
3 years later, 20 small-scale oil paintings on wood, about the size of your dinner plate, tell the story of a remarkable chef and the landmark restaurant, which was opened in the early 1940s by Chase's husband, Edgar Dookie Chase's parents. One of the paintings in the series will soon be heading to our nation's capital. The work, entitled Cutting Squash, has been acquired for the permanent collection at the National Portrait Gallery of the Smithsonian Institution.
We're all lucky to have her represent our city, especially at the National Portrait Gallery. I can't think of a better ambassador. In this particular painting, it's one of the few where you really get somewhat of a frontal view of Miss Chase as she's working. And you can see a lot of the details, not just on the cutting board with the squash, but if you are able to see the smoke from the red beans that are cooking in the background, also a lot of the other kitchen items that are surrounding Miss Chase, you can kind of get this perspective of what the kitchen looks like while she's there prepping. And I wanted to give the viewer that inside look into what is going on before the food reaches the table.
Bloch's use of color in this series is extraordinary. And in each piece, the viewer's eye is drawn to the chef.
You know, it was definitely a conscious effort to keep a lot of the intensity in color focused on her. And as your eye leaves her, it begins to get a little less intense. So the idea in that aspect is to draw your eye to Ms. Chase and almost to her action in what she's doing. So there's almost this crescendo from the outside in to whatever action she's doing at the moment. When you look at the kitchen works, you can see her surroundings are primarily gray. It's, you know, almost void of any dynamic color, except for the food and the fruit and the vegetables that are on display within the picture that Miss Chase is cooking and cutting, and also her baseball cap. So, you know, in a way, it's those colors really pop because of the subdued environment that's there. Now, conversely, if you go into the dining room scenes where she has those vibrant red walls, you can see that there's a huge contrast between some of the dining room pictures where it's colorful all over versus the kitchen scenes where there are parts of vibrant color here and there kind of hitting you as your eye scans the painting.
Those vibrant red walls are part of the exhibit, as well as a table and dining chairs reminiscent of Dickie Chase's restaurant, where viewers can sit and write down memories they have about the landmark establishment they wish to share. Gustav Blosch III graduated from the School of Visual Arts in Savannah, Georgia, and earned an MFA from the School of Visual Arts in New York. The exhibit, Leah Chase, Paintings by Gustav Blosch III, is on view at the New Orleans Museum of Art through September 9th. The exhibit is accompanied by a beautiful catalog published by Hudson Hills Press. Blosch and Leah Chase will be on hand Friday evening, August 24th, at NOMA for book signings.
Everybody eats when they come to my house.
A good meal followed by grand opera makes for one great evening out. Here's a heads up for opera lovers. Native son and tenor Brian Emel and his wife Irini will perform solos and duets from the grand operas in concert to benefit the Ladies Opera Guild, which helped to propel Emel's now international career.
We are going to start the program off with Recondita Armonia, which is from Tosca, and it's the first aria that I learned while I was studying at Loyola. And then I'm going to sing the aria from Faust, and my wife will sing the Jewel Song, and then we'll sing the Love Duet. And the second half of the program, selections from Rusalka, which was my European debut, and a duet from La Bohème, and then a couple of surprises at the end. I hope that the audience comes away with a sense of pride in someone from our New Orleans community who grew up in Metairie, went to Jesuit High School, and went to Loyola and stayed and did almost all of my studies in New Orleans. You know, and I couldn't have done it without the support of this very group, these ladies who were so, and gentlemen for that matter, but I did many concerts for them and while I was still at Loyola and even after, to help promote opera and to get the word out. And, you know, everything that's happened in the past 3 or 4 years, you know, there hasn't been a moment where I haven't thought about the people who helped make this possible.
The concert, presented by the Amici Group, is Saturday, August 18th, 6:30 p.m. in Rogers Memorial Chapel on the Tulane University campus. Open to the public with tickets available at the door. Seating is limited. Emel returns to New Orleans in the spring to perform in Madame Butterfly with the New Orleans Opera. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO and WWNO.org. We'll travel down the bayou now with WWNO's Ian McNulty as he visits the Houma Regional Arts Council with a local artist to see how this nonprofit organization is using creative ideas to make a difference in our community.
New Orleans-based artist Jamar Pierre shows his paintings at Jazz Fest each year, and his public works add color and character to the Tremé neighborhood. These days, he's also working in schools across the river parishes and bayou region around New Orleans, in places like Lutcher, St. John the Baptist Parish, and Houma, helping students create sprawling, history-telling murals for their schools. Pierre says these murals are collaborative efforts, works intended to inspire and engage students in different ways.
We always have elderly people in the community that come and talk to us, too, that give us history. And we have the whole community have an input in the mural. I don't create the mural on my own. They get a chance to record history and preserve history and share it with adults and kids in the school and make a giant billboard for education and art education.
These mural projects are part of a wide-ranging effort to return arts programming to schools around Southeast Louisiana's coastal parishes. The effort is being marshaled by the Houma Regional Arts Council, a nonprofit that serves a six-parish area and funds many different projects from individual artists, performers, and cultural organizations. The council's overall mission is to make arts and culture more accessible, and that brings special challenges in small Louisiana communities that are often isolated by the region's unique geography, as Executive Director Glenda Toops explains.
Sometimes you have to drive 15 miles up the bayou, cross the bayou, and then go back down 15 miles to get to certain areas. There's different pockets of populations all around throughout our whole region. So we don't want to just, you know, say that everybody needs a dance project. Come to Houma because it's a central place. We try to really cater it. We develop programs that fit the needs of individual communities.
So the council might offer drama and theater for school children at a library here, and then a quilting class for elderly residents through a community center there. Most recently, the Houma Regional Arts Council has embarked on what it calls its Coastal Communities Youth Arts Project, serving children in rural communities where other support for the arts has withered.
There's not as much exposure to arts and culture in the schools as there was 20, 25, 30 years ago. So now what we've done is take it on as a project to try to bring that back into the schools. And it's a huge, massive project. At the end of the 2 years, we estimate will impact about 40% of the region's youth, either through school activities, library activities, community center activities, and summer programs.
For Jamar Pierre, working in schools has been an opportunity to share the incredible power of expression and the life opportunities that art has given him.
I feel that everyone is obligated to pass that dream down and not tell those kids they're going to be starving artists and musicians and show them how they can make a living and travel the world doing something they love and to bring that culture back.
Learn more about the Houma Regional Arts Council at WWNO.org. For WWNO, I'm Ian McNulty.
The Community Impact Series with writer Ian McNulty is made possible with support from the Greater New Orleans Foundation. Let's see. She's a frequent panelist on an NPR game show. Wait, don't tell me. She's also an advice columnist. Yes, Amy Dickinson of Ask Amy, WWNO's Fred Kasten, who produces The Sound of Books, caught up with Dickinson to talk with her about her best-selling memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville, A Mother, A Daughter, and The Town That Raised Them.
Amy Dickinson's success with the daunting task of replacing advice column legend Ann Landers at the Chicago Tribune back in 2003 led, within just a few years, to something of a clamor for her to write a book.
I had editors calling me, and everybody wanted an Ask Amy advice book. And I understand that there was this idea that that would be very commercial. And I tried for a couple of years to write the book I now think of as Amy's big book of advice, but I just couldn't do it. And I was here in my hometown in Freeville over spring break one year, about 6 years ago, and I went to my niece's kindergarten play at the village school. This is the same school where I had gone to school, and she was in kindergarten, and I went to this little play, and I looked around, and I saw all of these people who I have known my whole life, you know, people I went to school with who are now parents, and my sisters, and my aunts, and my mom. And then I looked at these children performing, and they were doing a play about sort of an homage to our rural heritage as farmers, and they were chickens and ducks and cows, and it was adorable. My agent was calling me later that day, and she was going to make me tell her my final decision on what book I would write, and this deadline was really looming, and I had nothing. And she called me at the appointed time, and she said, so, what do you have for me? And I said, you know, I really want to write about livestock. And she started laughing, and she said, I don't know what you're talking about. I live in New York City. I have no idea what you're talking about, but I love the way you sound, and she said, go for it.
Amy Dickinson started work on what became The Mighty Queens of Freeville that day.
I took a year to write a proposal, and it really, really paid off because it was one of these fluky literary stories where this proposal went out at noon on a Wednesday, and it went out to all the major publishers in New York, and by 5 o'clock that day, there was a full-scale bidding war in progress, and I ended up being able to choose the publisher. I interviewed the publishers, and it was unreal. And I got to choose the publisher based on, you know, my interaction with editors and their promises and guarantees about how they would handle this book of mine. And I chose very well. And it's been, you know, my publishing experience was really, really amazing. The writing, I finished the book in 9 months, and it hit the New York Times bestseller list on its first week out, and it's still chugging along. So yeah. I have to say, I got really, really lucky.
Well, you had a really good story to tell.
I did.
A story told in a dozen topical essays, richly interwoven with telling detail about Amy Dickinson's life as a single mother, raising her daughter Emily, and the profound impact the women of Freeville, especially her kinfolks, had on the two of them. There's a river of tears in here, but there's also a hell of a lot of laughs.
I know. I don't know. I think that describes sort of my everyday experience, always evolves. One critic mentioned how much crying there is in this book. I'm pretty open, I guess, about the number of tears I shed myself. And then there are other parts of the book that make other people cry. It has poignancy to it because it's true. Any book about real relationships, loving people and losing people, there's some real poignancy there. And there's a lot of humor and outright comedy because, of course, it's about me.
Amy Dickinson, author of the highly recommended memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.
Fred Kasten's The Sound of Books can be heard Wednesday mornings at 7:35. And we have a little something extra for you in our Lanyap Corner. Save the date, Wednesday, September 5th. WWNL will host the 4th Annual Culture Collision, a celebration to kick off the 2012-2013 cultural season. Art lovers will get a sneak peek at upcoming events as more than 50 of the city's cultural organizations will come together for a one-of-a-kind happy hour to encourage participation in the Crescent City's art scene. The event will be held at Generations Hall, Wednesday, September 5th, from 5:30 to 8 p.m. There will be an after party in the big room featuring Ratty Skervix from 8 to 10 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. You can catch a free concert in Lakeview featuring vocalist Leah Chase and Cindy Scott as they share songs about friendship. Juilliard-trained Chase is the daughter of former band leader and restaurateur Dookie Chase. She was named a New Orleans Jazz All-Star in 2009 by New Orleans Magazine. Cindy Scott is the former director of UNO Jazz Voices and was a hit with crowds at Jazz Fest this year. The singers will be joined by pianist Michael Pellera, who heads the jazz program at NOCA. The concert will be held at the Community Church Unitarian Universalist, 6690 Fleur-de-Lis Drive, Sunday, August 19th, 7 p.m., free and open to the public. A group exhibit is in the mix as the University of New Orleans St. Claude Gallery presents Rejoin, an exhibit of visual artwork by UNO Department of Fine Arts faculty. Artists include Professor Emeritus Doyle Gerda Jensen and Fine Arts Professors Jim Richard, Richard Johnson, Cheryl Hayes, Don Rule, and several visiting artists. The show kicks off the 2012-2013 academic year, rejoining students and teachers and showcasing the department's professional works. Rejoin is on view at the UNO St. Claude Gallery, 2429 St. Claude Avenue, through September 1st. The gallery is open Saturdays and Sundays from 12 to 5 p.m. And we round out with an indie film directed by Academy Award winner Jonathan Demme. The New Orleans Film Society, Ashe Cultural Arts Center, and WYES New Orleans will present a screening of the documentary I'm Carolyn Parker, The Good, The Mad, and The Beautiful. The film follows one of the most outspoken voices in the fight to return home to New Orleans after the devastating floods that followed Hurricane Katrina. The screening will be followed by a question and answer session with author and producer Daniel Wolfe. The event is free and open to the public. It will be held Friday, August 17th at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center, 1712 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, 6 to 8:30 p.m. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.